The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by Me Audio. So here's the deal. If you've ever seen me in a live stream or in an interview or some other kind of video, you've probably seen me wearing some fancy earbuds. For the last couple years, my work buds have been almost exclusively from Me Audio. Excellent drivers, fantastic accessories, and both my wife and I had our ears scanned by the folks at Me Audio for custom molded ear tips. Super comfy. The MX line of Pro in-ear monitors is one of the easiest lineups to understand, starting at $60 and built around actual professional use. Detailed sound and durable construction, but also with some fun options like customizable faceplates. Even if you're not working on stage or in studio, Pro solutions like these are fantastic audio options, and they don't need to break the bank. And the company also supports a lineup of consumer gear with options for true wireless and noise-canceling Bluetooth earbuds, adapters for TVs to stream your audio to nicer headphones, and headsets for kids to help control the volume on fresh, developing ears. I can't stress that last one enough. We have to start kids out with healthier listening habits. It's a great combo, high-quality audio gear built by a team of folks with recording-grade use in mind, but at consumer-friendly prices. But of course, I can do you one better. If you shop the kit at meaudio.com and use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, you can save an additional 10% over their already competitive prices. Once again, meaudio.com, M-E-E-audio.com. Shop some fun kit, promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, 10% off. Keep your ears and your wallet happy at the same time. I want to thank the folks at Me Audio for hooking up the promo code. Now, let's get on with the show. All right. I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'm Juan Carlos Pagnell, a.k.a. Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this terribly named podcast series. Just doing a quick mic check here at the top. I had the weirdest issues getting the stream set up this morning and could not hear any of the pre-show music. So just making sure I'm coming in loud and clear. Someone in the chat, let me know if I'm just sort of talking to myself right now. Or if you're just catching this, like, interpretive dance. The hilarious part is this is still going to be fine for the audio version of the podcast put out later, because I'll just take this audio and we'll just go. Simon says, Hypno says, so loud. Am I distorting? Or am I just deliciously full sounding and rich and robust? Again, this is mic check, so if you're hearing like garbled transmission, I can't hear it coming back my side. I don't know what I sound like to y'all. So anyway, we've got a really fun crew already here in the chat. Ooh, Simon says Hypno says no clipping, full rich and Brian blessed like. I probably do, but I don't. And Oonscon says I sound good. Bionic Scoop just popped up to say, yo, yo. We've got Vince Nova. We've got Muppinish. Simon says Hypno. We've got Gary the Fireman. Woo, woo. McCorkerin 3 is trying to figure out which phone to watch the stream from because he's got a couple. Ron Guido, missing someone. Barry Johnson is going to be in listen mode as he's going to be working with a client. Jman150, Paul the T guy, Al Sabakli, I think Hawks Talk popped up real early just to give us a quick good morning. Sound is good from Hawks Talk, and JMX Warrior is saying afternoon. Because it's afternoon for JMX Warrior. But it's 9 a.m. Pacific time, which means we have gadgety goodness and geekery to jump in on. Zalbotnik is listening during work. So that's good. I like that. Listening during your workday was always allowed. We've got a lot to just kind of ramble through. As you may have noticed, this is the last Monday of April. We're already done with April. This year is flying by. It's going too fast. So as we get to the last Monday of every month, it's a chat-driven show. It's what we call our pajama podcast. I am literally streaming in what I slept in. That's probably kind of gross, but, you know, you can only see me from, like shoulders to top of head. So that's that. It's not too graphic a depiction of what one's sleepwear is like. It's very comfy. It's not indecent. How about that? Bray Gray, good morning all. I'm heading into a meeting, but I'm listening. Again, for all of you who are listening during your workday and you're listening to me talk about my pajamas, it's what grown-ups do. I, too, am a grown-up. Hawks Talk says, yes, time is moving fast. We are accelerating through. So this is what's kind of interesting, is we're getting through April and we're about to hit May. So the normal structure of the tech year was regularly kind of like an explosion of an announcements around CES and MWC, then a bit of a dip and you kind of caught up. There'd be a bit of activity leading into the summer because a lot of companies know that during the summer, people aren't really shopping electronics and gadgets and stuff like that. And then so the summer is like sort of the tech slowdown time. And then we see another ramp up as back to school starts kicking up again. You know, Father's Day, dads and grads, you know, we start kind of accelerating to that kind of a point. And then we have like another sort of Techtober is another exciting time. What all of the gear sitting on my desk right now, and I've mentioned this in numerous podcasts, and it's genuinely too much to properly keep up with exactly the same kind of review format and structure for every product that comes in. Nothing has really slowed down. I have not really caught a window to really to just sort of settle in and catch up, you know, just kind of put my head down, get some videos out, and then get back up to the rest of the year since last October. It's been go since last October. And it's a really heady idea to think like we might hit this summer with additional gadgets and announcements and embargoes and pre-releases and leaks. And that's really difficult to kind of consider. You know, that's, I want to be excited about all this stuff, but the churn is now happening so fast. And the algorithm is dumping video so quickly. All of our content is just immediately disposable. We've talked about this on numerous podcasts. In fact, the last month's pajama podcast, a main part of the focus was talking about how do we keep this fun when we're expected to kind of just continuously put out content, right? Every platform expects of us constant production so that it's fueled for this sort of short form video, disposable, I'm just swiping through a feed of never ending video clips. Well, to have a never ending feed of video clips, you have to have people who are constantly producing content. And if you take any step back from your channel dies. It is almost impossible to kind of recover momentum on a channel. The algorithm completely works against you unless you bring a huge audience from outside the platform, which is also increasingly impossible these days. I try to do things like set up the Reddit. Early plug for reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. And hold on, I want to show this off. A pajama podcast is very different. We're not going to do the same structure of like news block and gadget block and all that. But you know, we're gonna. I usually skip the subreddit plug for the pajama podcast. But I think we can just show this here quickly, not do a huge segment on it. But let's. Okay, so let's do top posts for this week and screen share this. And so the number one video over the last week was Samsung Galaxy A54 5G versus Google Pixel 6a. Which one to get? Save your money. And this is a really great video talking about a sort of $300-ish phone on sale against a $450 phone brand new. And it's from a channel, Munchie, with 60,000 subscribers. It's the number one post with 8 votes. 8 votes over the last week. and we've got 2,700 members on the subreddit. So, you know, the ability for someone to contribute and actually have a meaningful interaction and change up the rankings on a subreddit with almost 3,000 subscribers right now is pretty significant. Literally one vote across the top four posted, against the top four posts on the subreddit this week would have changed the number one. One click of an up arrow. I've got 35 people right here. And if half of you upvoted one post, it would immediately become the number one post. So this is kind of what I mean when creators start airing their dirty laundry, right? I don't want to turn every conversation into woe us content creators, but what the algorithms do for keeping content on a platform full of disposable, churned content is create this kind of tech apathy. And if that's not the kind of content you enjoy, then unfortunately it takes effort to sort of support the content that you might like. Simon says, "Hypno, are we blue skying and living outside the SGGQA box?" A little. the pajama podcasts are full on ramble. So wherever we kind of go, I have a couple loose ideas that we could talk about. Obviously, I put some ideas in the title and in the description of the video. Obviously a major talking point. We could spend some time drooling over it. Xiaomi 13 Ultra. We can start taking a look at some of that, early coverage. I know I'm not super deep into a lot of the videos that people have posted because they're all real early videos, and the conversation that I feel is going to be most critical with something like the Xiaomi 13 Ultra requires more use than a week under embargo with early Chinese ROM software. Like, it's the worst time, I feel, to talk about what makes the Xiaomi 13 Ultra interesting, except for pretty videos with B-roll and sort of reading off the specs that have just been confirmed. And we can do that. We can do this on the stream. I maybe have a shipping notification for a Xiaomi 13 Ultra. Major parts of that coverage will be going to patreon.com/slumgadgetguys, the people who are helping to subsidize the funds necessary for shopping really expensive phones like a Xiaomi 13 Ultra. And again, I'm not trying to besmirch people that are doing good work. I just feel this is what's difficult. Doing a little bit of housekeeping. Last week was just kind of a weird week. I got a lot of content kind of stapled together, and I've got a lot of stuff set up. But like one of the main videos that I put out, and it was just funny because there was something in the air. I regularly try to have conversations about getting more use out of your gadgets. Like, how can you take the compute power of your phone and use it to replace something like a laptop if you needed to, or even if you just wanted to? It's a fun challenge. And I still, my videos don't get lots of immediate traffic, but I've got a pretty good long tail channel. Like, I'm still regularly getting comments on desktop mode videos that I put out from like 2 years ago because those builds of Android are still relevant today. If we look at how Android phones are updated, someone on Android 11 is still looking up information on what to do with their phone. I mean, that's still a practical consideration. So this last week, I finally cobbled together a look at the Android 13 desktop mode. And I wanted to host a bit of a conversation about how to spruce it up and how to make it a little bit better. Now, I've been doing this for years, but I kind of held off because usually what I'll do for a desktop mode video. So we've got Samsung DeX. You plug a Galaxy phone into a monitor and you get a computer-like environment and your phone can still be a phone. Moto Ready 4 is the best version of this currently available. You plug it in and you get a variety of options that you can use. You can use it just for video streaming to match the resolution of the monitor. You can get, you can set it up to streamline getting into gaming, so you can use your phone like a console. It is the best, version of use your phone to do more. And while it's connected to the screen, you can still use your phone like a phone. Honor Magic Desktop. Some of the gaming phones have alternative views so that you can kind of plug in and get full screen content if it's like just for gaming or for slightly more computer-like environment. And I'm putting this video together, and there are a couple apps that you can use to kind of help manage this. You can kind of improve it. But usually what I'll do is, for the next beta version of Android, I'll look at a OnePlus phone. So Google Pixel devices are often the first to get the newest beta or the newest version of Android. Unfortunately, our Pixels, hashtag Team Pixel, hashtag gift from Google, they do not have video output through the USB-C port. So to get a good look at what that desktop mode really looks like, you can do sort of like a simulate second screen thing, but it doesn't work great. So you want to be able to show like what it looks like when you really plug it into a TV or when you really plug it into a monitor. So for the last 4 years, I've been turning to OnePlus devices. And OnePlus phones often get the beta build of Android almost as quickly as a Pixel, but they did have video output through the USB-C port. So I really should have made this video last year with the OnePlus 10 Pro. But when I started playing with the updates for Android 13, the OnePlus 10 Pro and the Sony Xperia 1 Mark IV, they both got updates to Android 13. The desktop mode was broken. It is non-functional when you use those phones now. So you plug it in and you get a desktop view, and the little app drawer totally doesn't work. You cannot launch an app in that view. So right now, I kind of feel like if you've got an older Android phone, especially Android 11, I think Android 11 was the most functional version of that alternate desktop mode. So I didn't want to just leave it at that. And instead of just doing a video like, oh, this is broken, because you kind of make that one video, and then if anyone catches it, they just give up. I mean, look at how few upvotes a subreddit gets with almost 3,000 subscribers. It's like, again, if you're not constantly pushing the idea of trying this, it only takes one video from one person to say, you know what, it's just not that great. It's just not that great. And it kind of confirms the lack of momentum from that individual. Yeah, you know, well, that one guy said it wasn't very good, so maybe I just won't even try. And I don't want to do that. So I put together this Android 13 desktop mode video to look at two apps from a developer named Braden Farmer. Second Screen was one of the apps I wanted to look at, but then Taskbar is an app that adds just a little bit of app drawer functionality to the Android desktop mode. And it works phenomenally well. I'm getting this video shot. I've got all the pieces put together. I've done all my screen grabs so you can actually see what it looks like. And the day before I'm ready to publish, ETA Prime does a video on the Razer Edge looking at Taskbar and Second Screen from a developer named Braden Farmer. Like, I had to immediately jump right back into shooting, and I shot just like a little piece of like, ETA Prime beat me to this by a day. But there is something in the air. You take a little mini gaming tablet, you take a reasonably powerful smartphone, and there's no reason why you couldn't accomplish a substantial amount of your computing work from these devices. You know, like, we have crazy amounts of compute power. It's kind of wasted if you just do the compute power in the phone. If you can't move the compute power to something else, like a monitor, or have a really fancy wearable headset display, or a TV, it seems like kind of a waste. Like, get yourself a good mid-ranger phone. We just showed the number one post on Glowing Rectangles was a great comparison between two sub-$500 phones, and you're good. Why are you shopping above that? It's, oh, I just want something that's a little nicer. Okay, but what are you doing on it? You could have pretty much the same experience and just save yourself $500. So, yeah. It's pretty great. ETA Prime beat me by a day. It was fun to shout him out in a video, and I loved seeing someone also kind of bridging that. But it's a topic that I feel needs to move beyond sort of a niche gaming conversation. And I feel bad because you can even kind of see it in ETA Prime's video, where he has to preface several times through the video, "I'm doing this on the Razor Edge to show you how Razor Edge can do other things." And oh, but I'm not saying you should buy one just to do this. I know people in my comments are going to have a bunch of things to slam on the Razor Edge, and so I can't just tell you that I like this thing. I also have to jump through the hoops of letting the enthusiasts know that maybe it's not good enough for the monies. And he doesn't say any of that, but it's like the constant reiteration of those kinds of phrases. And I want to be able to just say, like, if you have $3.99, there is a legitimately good idea behind buying a gaming tablet. Like, that shouldn't be a controversial statement. Let's say you want to buy a Google Pixel 6a for $3.99, and you want to buy a Razer Edge for $3.99, and you have one device that handles all of your communications so you don't have to burn the battery on gaming. And you have another device that handles a ton of multimedia use, video streaming, and does a great job of playing games, and does a better job of playing games than many phones would at that price, thanks to things like active cooling, where most tablets don't have fans built into them, but this tablet does. So it's maybe even better at sustained performance than a lot of more expensive phones might be. And that seems to be a super controversial statement that people can't get past. And that makes me kind of sad because I want to be able to say, like, hey, you know, if you like streaming movies on a portable screen of some kind, $3.99 could be a pretty good buy for you. I don't understand why that's such a big deal. And again, you see it reflected. It changes the behavior of tech enthusiast video content creators. ETA Prime was excited to show off advanced functionality on the Razer Edge, and multiple times in his video also had to acknowledge that some people in his audience might not want to buy a Razer Edge. And I'm not saying you should buy it to do this stuff, because a phone can do a lot of the same things, but it's that should be a foregone conclusion. I shouldn't have to spoon feed. Again, like when I was making that joke about Samsung Knights, like airplane in the hangar. That's what's exhausting. It really is. So, I made a video. My video is a little bit more focused on multitasking and productivity. I want folks to go see. I don't need to say this. ETA Prime's video is going to do an order of magnitude more traffic than mine. So I don't really need to cover the gaming side as directly, right? That's just repetition that is extra work for me that is unnecessary because I can point you to ETA Prime's video to talk about gaming. But if you're looking at a multi-windowed productivity environment for using your phone more like a computer, that's a little bit more what the focus of my video is. And there are still significant issues with Android 13, even when we have software that can kind of fix that. So that's the whole nuts and bolts of putting that all together. But it's a critical part of this conversation. Like, we can't leave it to just, oh, I guess better just buy a Galaxy. Because we're starting to lose practical functionality on other devices. I've held this up before. For example, I was just holding up hashtag Team Pixel, Pixel 7 Pro. This phone is a beast. But it's a phone that does phone things, and it can't really step outside that role, ostensibly because we kind of figure Google doesn't want to upset Samsung and that they're also trying to push initiatives for things like tablet sales again. But this phone should do well with using some kind of video out. The Tensor is still a ridiculously powerful SoC. There's no reason why it shouldn't be able to support an external display. I have to do my OnePlus testing on the OnePlus 10 Pro because, again, unfortunately, in stepping down in price, the OnePlus 11 loses that functionality of being able to plug cable into a monitor and put out some kind of screen share. And that's sad. The OnePlus 11 is a monster buy for people who want a nice phone that does phone things. But if we want to step outside just that kind of usage and tap the incredible compute power that's baked into this phone for a little bit more, we can't really do it. It's a bridge too far. I'm Muppet-ish. Hold on, I got to find that comment. Here, hold on, go back. Muppinish says, like I mentioned before, I'm mining crypto on my old phones now. Ha ha ha. I have like 100 old phones that might be worthy of that. What are you using to mine crypto on phones? I tried looking up, like, there were a couple Ethereum mining apps back in the day, and they all got tanked. So if you're using something specific, you know, hit me up. Slide into my DMs. Let me know. TED Talks Tech, absolutely. Team Pixel, hashtag Team Pixel deserves video output. We can't completely solve this through using wireless. Like, Miracast-style solutions or, like, Chromecast-style solutions are so painful and laggy. And as soon as you just use a cable, it is like any other technology. There is a convenience to not having a cable tethering you to your earbuds. But if you want the best quality and consistency of signal, you plug in a cable. If you notice, pro esports competitors, they are all linked using LAN equipment. They are not wirelessly streaming to compete because lag becomes a factor that can give one team an advantage. So when it comes to real hosted competition, you're connected over Ethernet. Again, the Wi-Fi in your house is perfectly adequate for a convenience, but it is not the best, consistent, dedicated connection. That's, you use a cable. And even more so with video. If you stream from a phone to another display, you have to expect degradation in quality, a more compressed signal. It's more likely It's more likely that the signal will stutter or occasionally buffer or something like that. Like, even when we're streaming Netflix in our great, like, we've got a professional grade, business grade Wi-Fi 6 router, it's pretty common. Well, actually, not Netflix. Y'all know I'm actually back down to 720p Netflix. More when I'm streaming a 4K Blu-ray rip from my Plex server, which is all locally hosted. And it's all locally hosted on a 10 gig channel. So I have 10 gig Ethernet. I've got a 10 gigabit switch and a 10 gigabit NIC in my PC. Occasionally, we'll still see some kind of buffer or stutter or struggle. So you need a cable. from Dave Burns. What I find frustrating is that we get marketed one overpriced mediocre device that only does one thing, but recommending one really powerful device that can do many things is a step too far. And it's a step too far because it doesn't perfectly replicate the experience of what you're already familiar with. And that's something that I expect from, like, my great aunt. That's not a conversation I expect from people who also call themselves tech enthusiasts. And that kind of hurts my soul, because my great aunt doesn't watch my YouTube channel, because my YouTube channel really isn't for her. It's for people who consider themselves tech enthusiasts. So when I get replies on a channel like that from people who say they think they know about tech, and it's like, but it's too hard and average consumers, and it's not like, because I have this one Windows program, it doesn't work on an Android phone, and there's no possible way for me to also do this pretty basic task without this one program that I'm familiar with. Can't expect people to have to relearn how to use different apps. And like, I'm not. But, you know, we could be teaching and opening up this conversation and bringing more people in. But instead, it's a bunch of people who think they're tech savvy on YouTube going, but I don't think it works. Like, I can't with you guys. I can with you all in the chat, because y'all are great. I really, really do enjoy that. Let me, I have to slide back up. I got to do a... because I don't have a soundboard. TED Talks Tech, subscribed with Prime. They've been subscribed for 17 months right now. Thank you very much, TED. I definitely appreciate the sub here on the Twitch and supporting production on this podcast. That's very, very cool of you. Let me catch back up with the chat here. Because I think Simon also... Yeah, Simon, again, this is like summing up, why use more words when few words just as good? Simon says, Hypno says, we have an all-in-one solution. Blah, 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 blah. Reading is fundamental, and it's hard. Simon says, Hypno says, why have an all-in-one solution when you could have two expensive solutions? And so I kind of get... I'm being super snarky to make a point, right? Like, I'm trying to drive home a point that I feel is too casually dismissed by average consumer reviewers. There is absolutely a good argument for a multi-device strategy for some people. A phone that just does the phone things, and a tablet that does the tablet things, and a laptop that does the laptop things, and someone who is affluent enough to buy nice versions of each of those can compartmentalize exactly what they want to kind of create the structure of computing that makes the most sense for them. That's, again, a foregone conclusion that should not need to be spoon-fed and spelled out. A good chunk of consumers are going to fit that model. So many consumers are going to fit that model. I should not have to take time in a YouTube video to say what I just said. It's kind of vomitous in my mouth how I need to break an idea like that down to the lowest comprehensible part of a conversation to make someone feel okay about their tech purchases. I shouldn't have to, and that's why I get super cranky, because it's like you're constantly repeating the, but, you know, what works for you guys? Hey, drop a comment down below if things work for you. Does that work for you? What are your thoughts? I made a 20-minute video talking about my thoughts, but what do you think? And it's like a stupid, open-ended question. It's not actually a practical conversation. I want to have, like, hey, tell me what video resolution and what streaming quality do you watch content at? Because that literally helps me decide on the future of whether or not I'm going to adopt 8K. That's a practical conversation that also gives you better content in the future as we actually talk together, as opposed to just, hey, guys, what do you think? Do you think that, you know, Fry's Electronics going out of business was a bad thing? You did a 45-minute video essay about Fry's going out of business. But what do you think? I hate the trappings of YouTube. They're so hack. You know, like, we need to do, like, YouTube tropes like we do TV tropes, right? The, I don't care what you write in the comments, it's just for the algorithm call to action question, needs to be savaged. It just needs to be absolutely made fun of. And it's so painful, like, trying to write into a video. Drop a comment. Maybe your comments can help other people out. I miss the days when YouTube commenting actually could be a bit more like forum posts. And now it's like YouTube's doing everything they possibly can to get people to overlook that comments are being left. Right now, if you're a content creator, right now, if you go into YouTube Studio, it automatically defaults to comments you haven't replied to. And it collapses the view on comments you have replied to. But I replied to a comment. That meant I was engaged to have a conversation with that individual, or to have at least a reply to that individual. And if that person replies back to my reply, that is infinitely more valuable than the people I chose to ignore in my comments. If I didn't reply to your comment, well, I shouldn't say that. If I didn't reply to your comment, I also have a life, and I can't work an entire full-time job just replying to comments on social media. I was about to be really pissy and snarky. That's not fair. But if there was engagement back from the creator, I believe that's a higher priority than just whether or not I got a comment. But YouTube takes the opposite tact. YouTube is saying, well, you already replied to this person, now you can ignore them and get on with the other comments that you haven't replied to yet. Clear your inbox, schlub. But that's not how this works. Psychologically, that now devalues what would have been a more interesting conversation for me, and I have to actively click and refresh YouTube Studio to get back. I have not found a way, and someone please correct me if there is a way, I have not found a way to force just the standard comment view. I want to see all the comments, and I especially want to see when comments have interactions. I replied to one person, and then there were like five other replies from other people. I want to be in the mix on that. That's why I made the video in the first place. Wasn't just to have the conclusive final word on a topic. It was because I think this stuff is cool, and I really want to talk to other people who also think this stuff is cool. So I don't know that there's a way to fix that. It seems like every time we get some kind of improvement to like the structure or layout, YouTube turns around and then does another thing like, well, in the mobile app, what we're going to do is collapse the view on content. So the user has to do like two extra steps to like get that back open and read through what people are talking about. That used to just be a standard part of the scroll under the video. And now it's like, well, we can tuck that away. And you're like, that's what's killing so much of this platform, is treating content creators like they're just an infinite supply of churnable fuel for the platform. And we're getting to, you know, like it's training AI models and blah, 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 blah. It's all pretty gross. I got to do J-Man150. J-Man150 gifting a tier one sub to 2 Turbo. Thank you very much. You're awesome. Thank you for supporting and also sharing so that other people are subbed and having a good time too. I greatly appreciate that kind of support. Let's see. So my chat from Twitch versus my chat from Restream, they're on different pages. So let's see if I can find. There was a first time chat from Cryptic, which Qryptik, which is now not showing up. Oh, there it is. So Cryptic is asking or replying to Muppinish, is it even worth the electricity right now? Whatever Muppinish might be using, I feel like a number of crypto mining solutions, because again, I'm going to be the mobile nerd here. Crypto used to like see all these companies that were building these giant warehouses of GPUs to mine this crypto, and you're like, okay, cool. I feel that we also overlooked what could have been a great performance per watt solution in using a phone. Especially as we're getting to newer phones that have like Snapdragon 8 Gen 2s. So let's say you had a GPU, an older GTX, like a GTX 1060. That can be up to around an 80 watt part in a desktop PC. So just the GPU, 80 watts of power from the plug just to drive that one component, and then it would mine for crypto, and you could conceivably make a profit on that if the crypto is worth more than the electricity it takes to run your whole computer, which is probably somewhere, if you've got a GTX 1060, is a couple hundred watts, maybe 400 or 500 watts, like CPU and motherboard and hard drives and all of that. The GPU compute performance of a Snapdragon 8 Gen 2 is pretty close to a GTX 1060 in a number of games that we can kind of casually compare if we were to write good crypto mining software that could take advantage of an SoC like a Snapdragon 8 Gen 2, we would have similar compute performance, but the entire phone is rocking, what, 10 watts? So 1/8 the power draw of just the GPU is running the entire phone. And so then your electricity concerns might be a little bit lower. Let's say that crypto isn't really paying out. It's not worth it to burn the electricity from a desktop rig. If you got 8 phones all together running 8 Gen 2s, And each one of those phones can almost approximate the GPU compute power of a GTX 1060, but they're using 1/8 the power. You could have almost 8 times the performance for the same amount of power draw as that one component, let alone the entire PC build. So if we could build ASICs on ARM hardware with that kind of focused specificity of performance per watt, we could look at a strategy that would make crypto mining feasible again. Like if you had a Snapdragon 8cx, right? I had that Surface Pro SQ3 model. If you took some of those types of components and just put them into a little box and maybe even gave it active cooling so you had a better consistency of performance, that could bring us back. That could bring crypto mining back into something that's a little bit more feasible. But yeah, Muppinish, hit me up. Let me know. I'm really curious to know what you're using for crypto mining. So catching up on the chat, I'm way behind the chat. Tech Loving Mama saying, hey, giving you a wave. TED Talks Tech, wait, does the Moto Razr have Ready 4? I believe the most recent Moto Razr that did not come to the United States, I believe it does have Ready 4 and video out. I don't know about the second gen Razr that was sold here in the United States. I never got my hands on one, and I'm not the biggest fan of folding plastic screens, so I didn't really try to fight for one or try to buy one or review it. But I think the newest Chinese version does have video out capabilities. Again, I think it's tragic. There's no reason why a Samsung Z Flip shouldn't support video output, except that Samsung knows they can kind of cut that feature, and then the phone is cheaper to make, and you're paying $1,000 for the hinge and the folding clamshell action, not the functionality. Samsung has always listed the Z Flip as a statement phone. It's a phone that makes a statement. It is not a practical computing device. It's also one of the reasons why I kind of always knew the Z Flip would be significantly more successful than the Z Fold. Gormlord saying, hell yeah, I don't know a single other phone reviewer that even mentions video out, and I think it's a real oversight. There are a few of us out there. TK Bay is regularly mentioning sort of those performance and omission types of conversations. ETA Prime would be one who highlights when a phone has that kind of advanced functionality, though. I don't think he's considered a traditional phone tablet reviewer as much as he is like a gaming enthusiast. But he regularly talks about like advanced usage, emulators, video output, that kind of content. If you're a fan of that, absolutely give his channel a follow. Sometimes you'll see it pop up on, I really like tech tablets. I think Tech Tablets does a good job when there's a listed functionality like Moto Ready 4 or Samsung Dex. It's often mentioned. I don't know that he highlights that kind of use as often. But it's frustrating because even back into like the LG G8 days, we'd show this off and we'd get a bevy of comments like, yeah, but who would really use that? And it's sad because like, a huge swath of the population, especially outside of North America, a phone might be someone's only computer. Like, that might be it. And if we had this kind of video output support on $300 to $500 phones, that would be a good reason for someone to save and to spend what is a painful price hike. Like, if you go from, like, a $200 Infinix to, like, a $300 Poco, but that Poco had video out and you could connect it to an inexpensive TV, and that could be a nicer computer environment for that person, there is zero reason why that shouldn't happen. I don't know if I still have it on my desk. I think I might. Nope, I've got the older one here. I think I might have put it up on the bookshelf. Yeah. But I recently reviewed the new Poco X series, the Poco X5 Pro. That has a monster Snapdragon in there. That is a ridiculously powerful phone. It sold for the 256 model, I think, launched at like 350 euro. There is zero reason why that couldn't be someone's whole computer. €350 phone. And it was a monster. Now, I feel like even at €350, that performance and that horsepower is kind of wasted if it's locked up in only being used as a phone in a phone form factor. Oh, yeah, McCorkran, absolutely. I mean, just think about how exhausting this conversation always is. There's this weird sentiment on tech YouTube that there can only be one winner in any product category and that everyone should just buy that thing. And, man, you start trying to talk about competition, and I have a bug up my rear about competition, and you immediately get, like, aggressive pushback on that. But why would you recommend that when this other phone is better? And it's obviously better because more people bought it. And you're like, well, your logical fallacy is appeal to the masses. That's a debate fallacy that has no bearing on the actual merit of the products that you're discussing. But I think I just said words that flew over that individual's head. I just now actually properly caught up to Cryptic's comment. Is it even worth the electricity? I'm so far behind this chat. Paul the T guy, do you think that OnePlus is destined to be sub to Oppo's flagships? I think that's the strategy. Oppo is turning OnePlus into a streamlined, aggressive, low-margin brand. Keep those units churning, hit the regions where Oppo doesn't have the same kind of notoriety or the same kind of brand presence, and then you can use Oppo to increasingly push into more experimental or more premium-tier devices. But premium-tier in Android is dying. We are going to hit that turning point over the next generation of consumers. People under the age of 30, especially in North America, more Western countries, there is zero interest in Android below the age of 30. In the United States, it's non-existent. I mean, like, it's properly dead. And I don't know that you can retrain those consumers unless something catastrophic happens with Apple, which we shouldn't hope for, but if it's the only way that we get competition, like, that might be it. That would be real bad, I think, for the global economy and for competition and for all the other players in this space, but Android manufacturers aren't really getting it done on their own. And tech reviewers have to follow the trend. So if the popularity trend, especially for younger viewers and younger consumers, is just to hype Apple, then you just hype Apple. That's the only way you can make money. So you're not going to sit there and make videos bucking the trend of your potential audience base, unless you're an idiot like me and what you really care about is sort of withering on the vine and you're frustrated by that. Short story incredibly long, Paul the Tea Guy. I think that's the play. You make the OnePlus label a competitor for an iPhone number plus. So the OnePlus 11 is a monster bit of competition for an iPhone 14 plus. It's like it's purpose-built. This phone is purpose-built to go head-to-head with an iPhone 14 plus, spec for spec for spec. And it beats it on most specs, but this phone can regularly be found for, what, sub $700? I mean, even importing this phone, I looked it up just on a because I was on Giztop to order a much more expensive device. Even if you import a global or a Chinese OnePlus 11, it's like $650. Like, that's how aggressive this phone is supposed to be priced. Let's look it up. I honestly can't remember if there is if the sale is going on. Because the OnePlus 11 launched, and there was the 128 and the 256. And then as soon as the Galaxy S23 arrived, they sold the 256 for the same price as the 128. And I don't know if that special is still going on. Okay, it doesn't look like that's still going on. So still buying 8 gigabytes of RAM and 128 gig of storage, we're looking at $699. So that's the full MSRP. And obviously OnePlus has trade-ins and other deals and offers and stuff like that too. And I think right now they're doing a special trade-in where they'll do an additional $100 on top of what your trade-in would have been. So $700. And let's look up an iPhone 14 Plus.
at 128 gigs of storage. We're going to buy now. I hit buy. And 14 plus. I'll pick a color. Just tell me how much it costs. Ah, there we go. And so if I screen share this, that iPhone 14 Plus is going to run $899. So 128 to 128, the iPhone 14 Plus full MSRP is $200 more than the OnePlus 11. I don't think you get $200 worth of value out of an iPhone 14 Plus over using the OnePlus 11. So what does that break down to? The OnePlus 11 has a triple camera array. The iPhone 14 Plus only has two cameras. The OnePlus 11 has the faster refresh rate display that tech reviewers like MKBHD said was so important that he had to show a Pixel 6a, a $400 phone, versus his iPhone 13 Pro, a $1,000 phone, which I'm sure he only got the base model $1,000 version of the iPhone 13 Pro. That's how important high refresh rate was, that you should spend three times more, or at least more than twice on your phone, because that's what he's used to, right? So the OnePlus 11 has 120 hertz, but the iPhone 14 only has 60 hertz. So immediately, the iPhone 14 in all of these tech reviewer videos should be an absolute no-go because it only has 60 hertz and you need to have 120. And the iPhone 14 is a $900 phone versus a $700 phone, which has that. Apple fast charging is a joke. So the battery on the OnePlus 11 has up to 80 watt charging. You plug the thing in for 5 minutes and you've got a day of use. It is incredible. It is so painful going back to phones that slow charge, Galaxies and Pixels and iPhones. It completely changes your behavior where you've got to plan ahead. I don't manage my battery on any of these fast charging phones. Oh, I'm running low. Let me plug in for a couple minutes. Okay, cool. I'm good for the day. the iPhone is going to have wireless charging, which is stupid slow and cooks your battery. And, the iPhone 14 will have millimeter wave support. Someone please correct me if I have this wrong. I believe the antennas are still different between the iPhone and the iPhone Pro, but the iPhone now carries millimeter wave for like Verizon super fast 5G. If you don't have access to millimeter wave, then you'll be fine on the OnePlus 11's sub 6. And I get 5G plus capabilities on Mint Mobile using the T-Mobile network in my neck of the woods. It's currently the fastest 5G connected phone in my collection for my neighborhood. When I do have that opportunity to use a Verizon phone on UW 5G, it is incredibly fast, but I've got to hold perfectly still and I have to be in direct line of sight of a millimeter wave antenna. So I don't know. Please, someone in the comments or someone in the chat, how do we quantify $200 worth of value between those two devices? And that's what the big push is. I don't know if I brought it up. Yeah, I've got the Xiaomi 13, which the Xiaomi 13 launched at a higher MSRP. Like, I want to say this launched full retail was like 800 euro, but now you can import the Xiaomi 13 for like 630, 620, something like that. And this is a really nice phone in that sub $700 category. We have, obviously, the Pixel 7 is a monster phone, sub $700. And the iQOO 11 also internationally is another phone that designed to kind of, I mean, I think the MSRP was higher again, but it was sort of built to sell comfortably at a cost savings of around 700. So you've got a couple of these name brands like Vivos are going to keep putting out really expensive X90 Pro Pluses kinds of devices. Xiaomi has a couple. They're looking at putting out like Ultras and Pros, $1,000 and higher. But I think brands and labels like OnePlus are increasingly looking at how do we streamline, cut a couple features, reduce the manufacturing costs, but then undercut a Galaxy S23 or an iPhone 14 and still offer a competitive experience. And I think a lot of people will benefit from that. But it makes me sad because, like, now I don't have a OnePlus that can do video out. I used to have a OnePlus that could do video out. I'm going to take a drink of coffee here real quick.
Hey, folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on r glowing rectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
Dave Burns making fun of me. Having your 4K lossless Blu-ray rip stutter on your 10 gigabit per second home network, hashtag some gadget guy problems. But it's just the reality of using Wi-Fi as part of that. You know, you're right. I'm a dork. I love it. Oh, McCorcoran, it's funny watching people melt down about the interior bezels on the Pixel Fold while they were totally fine with the absurd front screen on the Galaxy Fold. Well, you've always got to follow the hierarchy. If you're going to make money on YouTube, and this is from me to you, you can take this strategy and run with it. If you don't want to be like me and you want your channel to be profitable, you always acknowledge Apple is the bestest because they sell the most in North America. And then if it's an Android conversation, then Samsung is the bestest because they sell the most internationally. And as long as you always follow, your reviews always have to line up with that. And your conclusions always have to point that out so that the iPhone owners and the Galaxy owners are gratified. It's their gratification that matters. And then the YouTube algorithm is piggybacking on what companies spend the most on marketing. Those companies must be the most popular. So your videos get more viewership based on that popularity algorithm. So as long as you do that, you're good. Just always toe the line and you'll always make more cash. Simon says hypno. You know, like, leave a comment down below. Do you hate it when puppies are abused? Like, that's bad, right, guys? What do you think? Drop a comment down below. It's so bad. Oh, dude. Easy Computer Solutions in the house. What's up, Easy? YouTube Studio is so bad for comments. It's awful. I did, when the YouTube Studio in Los Angeles was first built, I was invited to go down. I had just hit my requirements for gaining access to the YouTube Studio. It used to be this full production space that you could book and borrow equipment to shoot videos and on a nice soundstage. And unfortunately, COVID killed the last remnants of that. But it was this way to kind of try and legitimize smaller content creators. I only ended up getting like two or three videos shot there because it was a bit of a process. It was a bit of an ordeal to get to use that space. But it worked really well for a bunch of content creators. It was a really cool initiative. So I got invited down there to see the very first beta of the YouTube Studio app. I can't even remember when this was. In my introduction class to the YouTube Studio, I was sitting next to Tazon Day. So this was about a year after Chocolate Rain came out. So I'm in this focus group. So this was probably about 2 years after Chocolate Rain. My brain doesn't have a good grasp on calendar, but I can tell you, oh, well, this was sort of what was generally popular on the internet back then. I made my daughter watch a Strong Bad video yesterday. My brain does not work linearly. It's unfortunately just riddled with these wormy pop culture references. I digress. I'm down in this focus group back then. a long time ago, and they show us the first beta of the YouTube Studio app, and we're all freaking out about it. And immediately I say, hey, but one of the things that's kind of broken here is if someone drops me a comment, I don't really reply to the comment. Because look at how you reply on YouTube. It actually says the person's name, and it kind of replies to the comment. And you're like, oh, you know, that's a really great point. We'll bring that up with our engineers. No update over at least, 10 years of the YouTube Studio app being around has addressed that issue. You go into the YouTube Studio app on your phone, and you reply to the comment, and it just lists, like, another comment in part of the chain. You can't really reply to multiple people in the comment. It's still fundamentally broken. It's the same thing like doing live chat on the YouTube app. Is there a way to reply to a specific comment in the chat? Because when I'm on a desktop, if I hit the @ sign and start typing someone's username, it brings up their username and then it highlights the comment for that viewer. So they can see someone replied to their comment. Why can't I do that in the YouTube app on my phone? That's fundamentally broken. It's like every time YouTube manages to improve one part of the experience, it's like they're ignoring critical and systemic failures that have been happening on their platform for like a decade. This is not short term. I brought this up to a YouTube app developer specialist hosting this Q&A and this focus group years ago, and it's still a problem today. I got to do a bow, 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 Jman150 gifting a tier one sub to Mountain Dew LW. Thank you very much, Jman150. Hello, Mountain Dew. Let me get back into, I'm way behind on the chat. I'm so far behind. Pajama podcasts always run long. McCorcoran. The Pixel 6a came out like 10 months ago. It's still going to get over 4 years of security patches. I feel like that's a pretty solid buy. There's very little reason to own more phone than a Pixel 6a until you start doing stupid things like me and you're actively trying to replace other computers with your phone. I do still kind of get cranky when I run into a roadblock like, hey, this is something I absolutely cannot accomplish on a phone and I need a computer to do it. But thankfully, that's still kind of rare, so it's pretty good. Let's see. Dave Burns, crypto is a waste of resources for fake money. And I mean, like, you're probably not wrong, but you know, if I can cash out some fake money for real money and all it took me was running 10 phones on my desk to do a little crypto mining, like, I'd consider it. There was a time where you could kind of pay off a good GPU over the course of a year with a little crypto. It's been interesting watching, like, Ethereum just change up the conversation, and now the excitement over crypto has kind of bottomed out. I feel like a lot of that stuff needs to go through the ebb and flow of popularity when it becomes sort of a buzzy, trendy thing. Like AI is now the buzzy, trendy thing. That's usually where you should be the most skeptical. And then once it becomes boring and commonplace, then you're like, oh, wait, actually, this could be something I can make money on. Moo! Grounded Tech, video out on all the things. KMK0, right? So KMK0 says, who needs that feature? So take it away and charge me more? It makes no sense. It's the same thing. Like, removing the headphone jack was a cynical play from Apple to make you buy Bluetooth earbuds. They had just bought Beats by Dre. That was an expensive acquisition for them. And they wanted more people to buy Bluetooth earbuds that would need to be replaced more frequently. If you buy good cabled headphones, they should last you a really long time. If you buy cheap cabled headphones, yeah, they're going to die on you pretty quick. But, like, I've got, these are my Mi Audio Pinnacle. I still keep these within arm's reach. And I can always get a new cable, pop off the driver, and replace the cable So as these start to age, I can keep them around longer. You can't do that with the batteries built into Bluetooth earbuds. Dave Burns, no debate, bros, Juan. Talks with TJ. Is there anything else? Like, so TJ says, besides camera and form factor, what is the selling point if not just the company and or the brand? And I feel like this is kind of one of the things that we've been sort of leaning into. And Talks with TJ, if you've seen any of my podcasts before, the kind of chat, the people that are in my chat, I feel like that's what we've lost in the greater review style. Right now, how you review a phone has become so formulaic that people have an expectation of the beats of, you start out with pretty B-roll of the phone, there's like kind of an intro beat. Hey guys, it's your boy, it's some gadget guy. In this video, I'm just going to repeat what the title of the video was that you clicked on so that you know what you're watching, because you clicked on the video on the title and that's what you're watching. So this is what you're watching. In this video, we're going to take a look at the OnePlus 11. It's a phone from OnePlus and it has specs. Now, if you don't know what specs are, that's short for specifications. And I'm going to read all the specs off for you. And that's going to probably take about 10 minutes, but you can look at the little bar, the progress bar underneath my video, and you'll see how long I'm going to take reading the specs. But it has a screen, and it has RAM, and it has storage, and it has cameras, and it has a battery, and that battery can be charged. And so that's like really important information that you couldn't have just gone to GSM Arena and read in like 10 seconds. I needed to spend all that time going through it because that's sort of the normal pattern. That's the conversation that we're having. And don't you feel like I'm really talking just to you? It's just you and me right now, not all the other viewers and stuff who are just sort of comfortable letting YouTube run in the background, and they don't want to be challenged with something that's going to distract them from their workday. So what we're going to do is we're just going to kind of comfortably spoon feed you the things you already know and the opinions that you already have about this stuff, and that's going to increase my video count, and it's going to lead to me having fewer sort of angry comments as I'm just confirming the bias of the largest group of those kinds of consumers. And I can do that for an hour. And what we've lost is there's a practical difference to owning a Motorola over owning an Xperia. There are only two favorite phones to kind of show off in that sort of higher tier productivity conversation. So this is my Xperia 1 Mark IV. And my SIM card is, again, back in my Moto Edge Plus. Over the weekend, I had the SIM card back in the Xperia because we went to a friend's bar mitzvah on Saturday. It was almost all day on Saturday. But it was nice having the Xperia because I could kind of just sort of take a couple fun little photos and some video and stuff. It was very discreet, just like click, click. And I could kind of just sort of sniper away a couple cute candids. Excuse me, a coffee burp there. Both of these run the most distilled kind of basic looking Android 13 versus Android 12. But it's the stock kind of look of Android. And on just sort of first glance, you would like, okay, well, yeah, these are just basic phones and they don't have anything that's flashy about them. They don't have any kind of crazy skin that's all animated and bouncy. And even between those two phones, the second you dig just a layer deeper than what's on your home screen and what's in the notification shade, they really couldn't be more different if two phone manufacturers tried to make different devices. They are fundamentally built on radically different aesthetics and philosophies. And we lose that nuance in the conversation when we just do the same review pattern that the average consumer reviewers do. And that's a shame, because that's what makes this community kind of vibrant and the competition more fun and the sort of examination more satisfying is like, hey, what is it that makes a Motorola a Motorola? Oh, yeah, I mean, you take for granted. You get a Moto and I guess you could do like that chop gesture. Oh, the flashlight. Oh, Motorola's had that for years. Well, why gloss over that? Yeah, you can replicate that with an app. But that same person who says something like, oh, but you could get the chop gesture if you just installed an app and then you did this and you set it up. That's the exact same person who also complains about people like me saying you can go into your camera settings and use a manual mode.
oh, people aren't going to go into the settings. They just need a phone that just works.
Okay, well, if you want a phone that just works and has a cute, like, wrist gesture to launch the camera, and you don't want to install another app, there's a phone for that. It shouldn't be glossed over. That should be a part of the conversation. And like before, my family was mostly kind of moving over to Pixels because my sister, my sister's husband, my dad, I don't think my brother, I think my brother's still on a Motorola. Before they were all moving over to Pixels, they were Moto people and like Moto G people. Basic phone, great battery life, and my sister loved having cute little gestures. Like, I just need a flashlight. Bam. I got a flashlight. Bam. Flashlight off. I didn't have to do anything. That's great. I didn't have to open the flip cover on my phone. I just launched the flashlight. That is the most basic difference on a Motorola versus any of these other devices. And it gets iceberg-like deep. When you look at stylus support, Moto Ready 4, some of the best gestures for split screening, additions to the UI, floating elements, stylus, active enabled stylus elements, remote shutter control, Bluetooth stylus support, it goes on and on and on and on. And in North America, second to the OnePlus, the Moto Edge Plus is one of the fastest charging phones available. It supports 67 watt charging. No Galaxy does that. No Pixel does that. No iPhone does that. The only competition for the Moto Edge Plus in that regard is the OnePlus series of phones. So I feel like that's important, but you don't get that kind of commentary or nuance when it's, oh, but, you know, you open the phone and it can do TikTok. All phones can do TikTok, so why not just buy the most popular phone? Gary the Fireman, the trend is your friend. It's an old Wall Street saying. The trend is great until it crashes and burns, and then our hobby is dead. It makes me sad. Gormlord, I haven't, and I'm not going to watch that video because it's going to give me an aneurysm. Gormlord says, anyone see Muda's video about, is it Muda or is it, anyway, a video about Apple fanboys arguing against third-party app stores on iOS. It's ridiculous. And I believe that the current rumor for iOS 17 is that Apple is going to allow sideloading of alternative apps and app stores in Europe, and that phones here in the United States will be locked from that kind of functionality. And I wonder why that is. It almost seems like if you have a strong regulatory agency that supports pro-consumer business practices, that it changes the behavior of even $2 trillion corporations, but we don't have access to that kind of regulatory body or agency here in the United States, so why would they give us the same kind of consideration? Currently in the EU, iPhones still have SIM card trays. But we don't get them here. And not only do we not get them, they weren't replaced with anything. It's not like there was some element of the design or the functionality of the phone that was changed. They just put a little plastic stopper. So it's just wasted space. Remember how concerned we used to be about wasted space on our phones? Losing the SIM card tray brought nothing. Nada. No benefit. It was just a sweetheart deal for carriers, and it enriched Apple's position in making switching phones more difficult. eSIM is such a pain in the butt, trying to do the same kinds of things that I just do with a SIM card. Yeah, that was it. that was the whole shebang. It's the whole reason to do it. Just like removing the headphone jack was to create a pain point and to make it harder for you to do other things with your devices and to charge you more to do the things that you used to do. It's great. Yeah, it talks with TJ. Phone carriers need more than just iPads and Galaxy tablets for sure. Do I have it over here? I mean, like, this is kind of where we run into those issues. I kind of blame Google for this. And someone tell me if maybe I shouldn't, but Google focused their large screen phone use on Chrome. So we got like this flourish of support for manufacturers putting out Chromebooks and even like Chrome slates, Chrome tablets to a degree. And Android as an operating system for larger screens kind of died. So in Android land, the only tablet that I really felt was worth recommending for many, many years was a Galaxy Tab. And it wasn't because this is a great built tablet that has Android on it. It was a nicely built tablet that you could escape Android. You could fire up Dex, and you could use Dex as the main UI. On a larger canvas, that was a recommendation I felt comfortable making. I don't particularly enjoy the iPad experience, even with some of their improvements to multitasking and file management. iPads have USB-C ports on them. I don't like the overly limited sort of split screen view, and Stage Manager is a huge step in the right direction for iPads, but it's not a universal, and it's still very clumsily implemented on this supposedly super powerful device. So what we got saddled with, and I don't mean to, this is going to be kind of trash talky, but this is just the reality of the manufacturing. What we got saddled with were a number of manufacturers like TCL putting out low-cost carrier tablets. But low-cost carrier tablets are still like LTE and 5G-enabled devices, so they're still radio-enabled. You can't make them super, super cheap, but they're inexpensively constructed, and they're often less powerful than a similarly priced phone, right? Because you've got so much more machine to make here. You can make like a $400 tablet, but you've got to step down the SoC, or you can buy a $400 phone that is going to be demonstrably more powerful than one of these tablets. And so now we've kind of poisoned the Android tablet market with this idea for consumers that you get these things for cheap or for free on your cell carrier contract. And they're okay, but they're kind of mediocre. Even when you give them to a kid, the kid's going to start using it and it's, oh, but it's stuttered. Oh, but it's skipping. Oh, but it's not fluid. My friend's iPad never lags, so we should just buy an iPad. We were at a birthday party for one of my daughter's friends, and I'm sitting down. I'm watching two kids. One's like 8 or 9, and the other's like 4. And they've got these incredibly large tablet cases, but they're huge tablets. But they're in these bright, shiny plastic, rugged armor cases. But they're both playing Roblox. So they can't be cheap Android tablets. And I look over, and boy howdy, those two kids are on full-sized iPad Pros. I'm kind of talking to the mom like, wow, your kids are really going to town on Roblox. I mean, have you enjoyed that? Blah, 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 blah. Mom had no idea what Roblox was about. Just that the kids freaked out when they weren't allowed to play it, so they just kept giving them the parents' tablets. And at some point, we just decided we've got to get them their own tablets. So they bought them full-sized iPad Pros. I noticed that the younger kid's tablet isn't straight anymore, even in the rugged case, and the screen has like multiple like edge cracks and stuff. And you're like, oh yeah, these iPad Pros, like they bend like tinfoil. It's just such a shame. She's already on her second one. We're gonna have to look at getting her another one, even though we found this massive armor case for it. And that's what we've done. I mean, again, the whole ripple effect has accelerated and is so aggravated by this kind of consumerism. I don't know that these new tablets might be able to fix that situation, but at least we've got something that we can point to. Actually, two things that we can point to. In the United States, it's actually going to be kind of exciting to see a Pixel tablet, okay, and a OnePlus tablet. In fact, we actually have quite a bit of info. OnePlus has already sort of detailed all the specs. The only thing we don't know about the OnePlus tablet is how much it's going to cost. But I would imagine that, I know a lot of people are like, oh, you know, if the OnePlus tablet comes out at $300, that's going to be an instant buy. And you're like, that's, the hardware is too good for that. I'm thinking more like $650, somewhere in that ballpark. It makes a lot of sense in my brain. Dimensity 9000, the battery life, the screen, quad speakers, the multimedia experience, the pen support. You've got an active digitizer for the stylus pen. You've got the keyboard. All of that is a Pogo pin connector. All of that has to work together. So I kind of feel like a OnePlus tablet around $650 makes sense if the company is going to have any profit margin built into that device. And I would imagine that a Pixel tablet is probably going to be in that ballpark, somewhere between $599 and $699. It doesn't make any sense to try and undercut value on something when right now you've got the Galaxy tabs off on one side, all very, very premium and very expensive. You've got a number of iPads that are kind of in the middle, below the tier of the iPad Pros. And then you've just got an army of low-cost, big-screen devices running like Snapdragon 460s. Yeah, the common wisdom is you will sell more devices if they're cheap, but you can't sustain a business model on selling every device at a loss. And then also you need to raise the cachet of Android tablets above that entry level. And you can do that if someone's willing to take a shot at using like a $600 OnePlus pad or Pixel pad or whatever they're going to call it. That makes sense to me. But yeah, I'm hoping that we'll see some real practical competition soon. The other part of this is at the same time that Google is trying to get Android back into this conversation, Windows on ARM is really good. You get a Windows on ARM 8CX, 8CX Gen 3 SoC. What's in the new Microsoft Surface, and a couple other players are putting some out too. That's a pretty good tablet. That's a really good tablet that also does a very good job of using Android apps and also does a really good job of using Linux software. So Windows on ARM is getting really good.
Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
What's up, everybody? This is Architect Preacher from Easy Computer Solutions. So if you love technology and you want to go deep and in depth about smartphones, tablets, computers, smartwatches, and more, check me out on YouTube. Open up YouTube.com or open up the YouTube app on your favorite smartphone or tablet and type in The Tech Preacher and join my community. Also, I have a live stream every Wednesday night that's called Wired Wednesday, where we talk about all things tech. I have an amazing group of people that's on my panel where we go deep and talk about the realness about technology. So come join my awesome community of techies on Easy Computer Solutions. Remember, I'm the tech preacher. So I want to thank Juan Carlos Bagnell for allowing me the opportunity to be on this short clip. So, Wine, back to you.
Ooh, JMX Warrior. Apparently, let's see. JMX says the UK has finally made a decision on millimeter wave bands, that they've picked 3 bands, auction date not set yet. And this is what we needed here in the United States, is like the FCC to say all cell phone carriers are going to interoperate on these frequencies, and that's going to be the future of 5G. But of course, we have this stupid notion of free market that we let them pick. You're like, no, that's not competition. That actually creates a lack of competition. You've got 3 companies that are making different flavors of the same solution so that you can't take your phone to another carrier is the opposite of competition. So McCorkran 3, Chocolate Rain came out in 2007. So it was probably around 2009. Yes, okay, that actually makes sense. So in 2009, we had started Movies You May Have Missed. I was mostly cutting videos and reviewing on some audio guy. Some gadget guy was probably going to get started in earnest around 2010. So yeah, it would have been 2009 or 2010 that I was sitting at the YouTube space in LA looking at the beta of the YouTube Studio app and telling them I need better support for replies and comments. And to this day, that has still not arrived. So it has been over a decade since I brought that up as a concern. You ever just sit back and wonder, like, what is Tayson Day doing right now? He seemed like a really nice guy. I really much enjoyed sitting in the same, like, intro class with him. He seemed really nice. I didn't get to talk to him much, but he seemed really cool. Ooh, Grounded Tech, I'm getting my Xperia 1 Mark IV back this weekend. Hey, congratulations. Welcome back to the Xperia crew. Just given, I'm debating what to put my SIM card back into, my personal line, and I think I might go OnePlus 11 for another week, just kind of going back and forth. Now that I've been back doing like Sony and Moto, and really pleasantly surprised at how the experience has improved. The battery life has improved, the power management has improved, the thermals have improved. The HN1 is still a hot piece of silicon, but it has been noticeably better than it was at launch. But I kind of want to now, I've had my SIM card in those two older phones and I want to go back. Like, was I not giving the OnePlus 11 enough credit for that 8 Gen 2 improvement? Dave Burns, I mean, we should own this and we should absolutely sort of revel in this. Dave says, Motos are for nerds. They absolutely are. Gary the Fireman, quote, poor use of space. Now again, if it's an HTC, oh, we're so concerned about hashtag wasted space. If it's an iPhone, well, I mean, it can't always be perfect, guys, and you gotta make progress, and you gotta let a company evolve, and so sometimes you have these transitions, and I'm gonna jump through all these hoops to make excuses where I would have complained about an HTC is totally different than if it's an iPhone. Oh, Gormlord. I do miss that. Google, who also brought us the Nexus 7, I'd pay $100,000 for a modern Nexus 7. I would not spend $100,000, but I'm sitting here next to my Razer Edge. And I'm going to bring this up again. This is my Razer Edge. I have the 5G version. The people at Verizon are probably not going to love this. And I don't know how the people at Razer feel about some of the content that we're making. I'm having a hard time with anything that's overly billed on the wonders of 5G. 5G has really failed to land the hype and the promises of what we built consumer expectations on. And I think so many of us in the tech commentary space feel used. Because we've been talking, hey, you know, this is the new radio and this is what it's going to be. And when cell towers go up in your area, you're going to see speeds and improvements and blah, 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 blah. And it makes me a little comforted by the fact that, well, yes, like I was excited to see potentially faster network coverage. If you catch the very first conversation TK and I had, we did a Sprint meet and greet. So Sprint was showing off some of their first 5G towers down near Santa Monica. And TK and I went and like, oh, wow, we did a speed test and we got like hundreds of megabits per second. Whoa, speed. But in that conversation, both of us were talking about things like, hey, speed is cool. But one of the coolest things that we saw were the new antenna arrays that are going to radically reduce congestion on these networks. And that's going to be a huge benefit for people who are living in cities. These new 5G, especially the new Nokia 5G radio antenna arrays. I feel vindicated, and I'm really glad that I nerded out on network management, and I wasn't overly hyped on speed. We sell 5G as the future of speed. Because that's what I feel has been the only practical benefit to 5G, is that communities have been able to set up towers and more people could be serviced at those towers, and that has been a benefit. Speed doesn't come unless you improve the backhaul. And so it doesn't matter if you get the 5G icon on your phone, your speed doesn't improve unless that company also invests a ton of money in making all of those pipes faster. And let's be frank, that has not happened in most communities. They bolt on the 5G radios, and then it's just like you put a faster router on your DSL connection. Your DSL connection didn't get any faster, but your local area network is better able to handle multiple devices and manage the data connection in your home. So I'm holding this. This is the Razer Edge 5G. I don't know that I would go for the 5G. It is a significant price premium for 2 gigs of RAM and a 5G radio. But this Razer Edge, if you get just the Wi-Fi version, starts at $399. It's a $399 mini tablet. I don't love how aggressive the curves are at the corners of the screen. I love that it's kind of chunky. It's got a great battery in here. It's got flat sides. You can really hold on to it easily. And it comes with a Razer Kishi, which I have left in my bedroom. I'm not going to go and get during the stream. But it comes with a controller that would normally cost you about $90, $100 if you got one for your phone. I feel all packaged together, that's a pretty good argument for a portable little mini tablet. This feels like the evolution of mini tablets that used to be all the rage. Remember, we had those early Galaxy Tabs. Remember, they were really big and chunky, 16x9 and huge bezels all the way around. Or like Gormlord is mentioning here, a Nexus 7. What was the Nexus 7? It was like a $300 or $400 7-inch tablet. If you had JNCOs, you could back pocket a Nexus 7. I can back pocket a Razer Edge and have a little mini multimedia gaming experience ready to go. Unlike my $700 OnePlus 11, the Razer Edge has video output, so I can hook this up to a TV. ETA Prime beat me to the punch on showing that off. I used to have, I don't think I do in Reach anymore. On the back of that, it's a little too buried. You know what? Let me try and see if I pull this stuff down. So, you know what? It wasn't as bad as I thought. So this is my Galaxy Note 8. Now, it's not a Galaxy Note 8 because the Note phone went from the Note 7 and it skipped a year. We didn't get a Note 8 phone, but we had an older Note 8 tablet. So this is an 8-inch Android tablet. It's got a little pen that's kind of built into the side. I very much doubt that this battery still works at all. I might have to give it a charge and see if it explodes. Because, you know, Samsung, they like to make incendiary devices. And so, if you just cut the aspect ratio. So if you went from 16x9 down to 20x9, I think the Razer Edge is 20x9. I'd have to look that up. But if you just sliced from 16x9 to 20x9, that's what the Razer Edge is. It's almost the same screen height as an 8-inch Android tablet. But look at how much smaller we have evolved that kind of screen size and experience. So while we all remember tablets like the Nexus 7 really fondly, just shrinking the aspect ratio to something a little skinnier, that's how much space we've eliminated from the old Android portable tablet experience. I'm really positive on the Razer Edge. $400, that is not an impulse buy. That is still a premium purchase for a lot of consumers out there, but this does all of your Android stuff, streams video, You can do messaging on it. It has a camera. You could do video calls on it. You could do game streams on it. It handles all of that. And it's pretty good at running Android games that have good controller support. Or you can do touchscreen gaming just like any other phone. And it comes with a Razer Kishi that you can plug in and get headphone output. And it has active cooling. So even though the chipset is a little less powerful than a current premium tier phone, the sustained performance is really good. So if we're looking at something like, what is the replacement for a Nexus 7? I don't know that it's unreasonable to point to something like a Razer Edge and say, that might be the fit. That might be something that you would want to consider or want to check out. I'm just saying, it exists and it's better than most people are making it out to be. Oh man, Kenox80 is saying, had to buy them iPad Pros, overkill for sure. No, Kenox, they had to buy them iPad Pros. There's just no other choice. They had to do it. They needed the bigger screens. They had to play on those. They couldn't have gone back to like iPad or iPad Air. No, they had to buy them the iPad Pros. Cup of Cash, have you ordered the 11 Ultra yet? Do you mean the 13 Ultra? Because I have ordered the 13. Yes, Cup of Cash meant the 13 Ultra. Sorry. Yeah, I have the 13 Ultra on order. I have no idea when it's going to show up. I really hope it's soon. Some of the people who ordered from Wanda Mobile have said that they've gotten their shipping notifications, so I'm hoping I won't be too far behind. Typically, between Wanda Mobile and Giztop, Wanda Mobile seems to ship a little bit faster. But Giztop has had very good service and communication with me in the past, especially when I bought my 12S Ultra. And the reason why I went Giz, I wanted to buy the 1 terabyte version of the Xiaomi. It's silly. 256 is now way too claustrophobic for phones that I really rely on. And 512, I can eat into 512 on a shoot now. If you catch a lot of my recent videos, if it's outdoors, I'm not taking my cameras at all outside the office anymore. So my Panasonic, which is used for this live stream, and I've got a G9 over there too, they don't leave the office anymore unless there's something very specific that I want to do with them. A 1-inch sensor gets really close to the sensor performance of Micro Four Thirds cameras. So I did a video on the Saramonic mics that was all shot, soup to nuts, on the Vivo X90. I did the Velotric Thunder bike video that was shot 4K60 from the Xiaomi 12S Ultra and the Vivo X90 Pro. So what was that? That was roughly 30 minutes. Yeah, that was roughly 30 minutes of 4K 60 frame per second video from both cameras. And that's before I did all of the 4K 60 video B-roll. And the only other camera I cut to for that Thunder, that e-bike, it was an electric bicycle video and I shot it outside. The only other camera that I cut to was a GoPro so that I could do some good like pedaling action photography. And it's a little bit harder to mount a phone to get that. But if I could, I would have. My 13 Ultra is on order. I also put in a separate order to see if I could get one of the camera grips. So we'll see if that shows up. The 13 Ultra is already looking at replacing yet again the other phones that I use for the other cameras that I use for production on this channel. McCorkran 3, the 5G era is totally disappointing. Most overhyped feature ever by the carriers and the phone manufacturers. Simon says, Hypno, 5G is the perfect example of it will get better with updates after release. Just give it 8 years. And we're already sort of halfway through the life cycle of what 5G should have been. We're already starting to talk about 6G deployment. And none of this gets better until we have regulators that can improve the network infrastructure. And we can't do that, especially here in the United States, if we keep pretending it's a free market thing. We really do need to make this public infrastructure. It's only going to get better when we take it out of the hands of the profit-driven corporate side. We let them manage the front end that consumers interact with, but we use the tax dollars that we were already giving these companies as sweetheart deals, and we keep it, and we just say, hey, you have to do business with the federal government to get access to this backhaul. You want to light up this dark fiber? Cool. But we can't keep pretending that this current infrastructure works, because we're not getting improvements. Comcast is like, oh, wow, we're going to maximize your copper. We're still dealing with copper on cable broadband. It's totally broken. McCorkran 3, I recalled the iPhone 12, which did not have great battery life, and basically the only new feature was 5G. No, don't, it was a double whammy. The 5G ate into a lot of that, and then also the SoC was less efficient. We don't talk about this in iPhone land. Average consumer reviewers aren't capable of detailing this kind of nuance. Going from the iPhone 11 to the iPhone 12 was more powerful. But if you gamed on an iPhone 12 for more than 20 minutes on a graphics-intense game, something like Genshin Impact, the iPhone 11 could sustain a higher frame rate. Now, where have we heard that story before? Oh, that's right. Phones that had the Snapdragon 8 Gen 1. And wasn't that the worstest thing ever when a Motorola or a OnePlus or a Samsung, when those phones ran hot? Well, don't you know, that's terrible. The 8 Gen 1 can't keep a sustained peak frame rate as high as the 888 or the Snapdragon 870 or 865. Well, that's just terrible. No one should buy devices like that, unless they're iPhones. And then it's totally fine. And wouldn't you know it, we saw something kind of similar on the iPhone 14 Pro. It doesn't really outperform the iPhone 14. Well, that's weird. The iPhone 14 Pro is supposed to be more powerful. But the older SoC that was used in the iPhone 13 and the iPhone 14 is able to keep up a better performance per watt and peak sustained output than the hotter SoC on the iPhone 14 Pro. Well, that's just wacky. Again, I feel like if we care about that on Motos and Xiaomis and Samsungs, we should probably also care about that kind of stuff on iPhones. It's got me wacky. It's silly. All right, I'm almost caught back up with the chat. This is amazing. DJNL, I love it. Aditya says, ooh, a Kishi in the bedroom, eh? I see you like using your toys in your bedroom. Yeah, I have a bad habit of gaming in bed. When you have a Steam Deck and a Razer Edge, and you start like, oh, but I'm so comfortable. It gets even worse when you take your Steam Deck and you plug in a wearable display, and then you can perfectly lay back, and you're projecting this large screen version of a game. Right now, I'm still grinding on Hades. I'm playing through Hades again because we've been getting a little bit more murmuring about Hades 2. And man, that game is super addictive for me. It's like a quick speedrun version of everything that I used to love about old dungeon crawlers like Diablo. And your commitment is very short-lived, but you can pick up and play a couple rounds, or, hey, I just want to kind of grind a little bit and build up a little bit of resources so I can do some upgrades. Let me just do a couple chambers. It's chamber to chamber to chamber, so it's really quick. It's got kind of the pacing of a really good mobile game, but the action is really satisfying, and you can button mash, or if you get the right upgrades, you can really tie together some great combos. It's just so delicious. I played it a little at launch, but now, like, kind of getting back into it again, it's just super hyper twitchy and addictive. And then I also completed all of the most recent I got the new DLC for Vampire Survivors. I spent a whole other dollar. So I think I've spent to date, between the mobile version and the Steam version, I think I've spent $12 on Vampire Survivors, and it's glorious. It's like, it's been worth every penny. I love it so much. But the most recent DLC just came out, and the new Forest and the new Abyss, some new characters to play with, some new weapons and upgrades. There's a bit more lore. Vampire Survivors is not a lore-heavy game, but there's been a little bit more story built into it. Awesome. It's so much fun. But the new DLC came out, and I immediately had to check off all of the new achievements and the new unlocks. So I got all of that out of the way, too. But yeah, it gets real bad when you can plug your headset into a Steam Deck and lie back, and it's big screen Hades or big screen Vampire Survivors on the ceiling of your bedroom. I know I got to be driving my wife nuts with Hades, because it is a lot of button action, but it's so... it's so good. Like, the portable version of that is so good. Yeah, Gormlord, I mean, I think this is fair, but it's also just kind of the reality of how tablets are built. I do like the Edge, however, my nitpick is the screen. I don't like the curves either, and I would like a 16:9 screen again. I would very much like to have 16:9 options that screen mirror directly to 16:9 displays. I'm totally with you there. But in the grand scheme of... what other $400 tablet comes close to this level of performance? I put it out there. I believe a OnePlus tablet or a Pixel tablet is going to be $600 or more. A Razer Edge is $399 with a Kishi controller. And I don't know... the TCL tablet that I held up here. This has a Companio, a MediaTek SoC. I forget which Companio it has. Is this on? I don't even know if it's charged. Oh, it is. Hold on. Let me see if I've got hardware, device hardware info, SoC. So this is a, it doesn't say what it is. It's a Companio chipset, but it doesn't have the name on it. Accelerator drive. So anyway, it's basically an octa-core SoC with two A76 cores and six A55 cores. So this is less powerful than a Snapdragon 855. So this tablet is less powerful than a Snapdragon 855. I believe the full retail on this, because it's a 5G enabled tablet, is somewhere around $400 or $500. Somewhere in that ballpark. Like, if I go to Verizon, let's go together. Let's go to theverizon.com, where I'm really still kind of pissy with Verizon because they're still messing up the trial that I did with their 5G home. Now I'm getting emails like, we're going to send you to collections if you don't pay this bill for an account that was never fully completed and for the equipment that you already sent back to us. And we sent you an invoice with $0 saying you didn't owe us anything, but then we changed our mind and now you owe us money on this. That's been a whole thing. So let me say, the fun tone of my video in that Verizon 5G home trial run has not lasted through the cancellation process. Boy, am I not happy about that. But let's see, shop, deals, devices, we want to shop, tablets and laptops. Come on, tablets and laptops, there we go. And TCL. I don't know if this is the TCL Tab Pro 5G. I don't know if it's this one. I think it might be. Full retail price for a 64 gigabyte TCL Tab Pro 5G. What do we think? What do we think the full retail price of a TCL Tab Pro 5G with 64 gig of storage is going to be? Anyone? Does anyone have a guess on what the full price of a Verizon TCL Tab Pro 5G? Simon Says Hypno says $199. Do we think a 5G-enabled tablet from Verizon is going to be $199? Aditya saying 200, McCorkran saying 499. Look at what you look at is saying 499. 499 is the general correct consensus. Subaru Master. No, there we go. Subaru Master GR is saying 369. He is the closest without going over. So in Price is Right rules, we're going to screen share this now. 64 gigs of storage, $399. $399. So if you add 5G to a tablet, that's what you get. Now, the other thing is, I don't know if they've got the full specs. Do they? So let me scroll this down. Accessibility, network, battery, camera, performance. So this is a less powerful tablet than the one that I held up. So the sort of international flavor of this TCL 5G tablet uses a Companio. Uses a MediaTek SoC. And I bet you there's something in there where Qualcomm probably has better support for Verizon's network. So Verizon and Qualcomm work together. For $399, 64 gigabytes of storage, you will get yourself a Snapdragon 480 5G chipset. A Snapdragon 400 series SoC for $400. Or you can skip the 5G and get yourself a Razer Edge Wi-Fi edition for $399 with a Kishi controller, and this thing benches roughly in the ballpark of a Snapdragon 888, maybe an 888 Plus, but it also has active cooling, so you can run that SoC harder than you can on a phone. So this significantly outperforms phones with an 888 if you play games on it for any length of time. And that's the comparison that we're looking at. Someone please, in this chat, tell me where you can get a reasonably new tablet within a year of launch. So let's say it's a tablet that launched the beginning of 2020 to now for a better price or for a more powerful device. A $400 tablet that can outperform an 888 Plus. Let me know. Because if there is, I want to talk about that thing and show people that they have an option in hardware. To date, and with my slightly more limited experience with tablets, that hasn't been a thing. The only thing that I can kind of come close to with that sort of performance metric would be going with a two-generation-old Red Magic phone. I think that's pretty similar. Active cooling, an 888 chipset. Was that a Red Magic 6? So the Red Magic 7 has the 8 Gen 1. You could probably get that pretty cheap now. When I was using the Red Magic 7, the screen got up to almost 130 degrees Fahrenheit with the fan running. So you can't really touch the screen. You definitely want a controller on that bad boy. That definitely delivered better performance in terms of frames per second. It definitely outperformed the Razer Edge. But that's a phone that has only gotten one software update in its entire history. The Razer Edge has had two. That's already 100% more software updates than my Red Magic 7. So, Subaru Master GR, thank you for playing. If we were on The Price is Right, you would have been called up for the showcase. You would have done great. Simon says, no, I didn't add the Verizon tax. Aditya, no, I heard 5G and immediately added $100 to the price, and not enough, Aditya. You should have added $200 to the price of a Snapdragon 480 powered Android tablet. McCorkran, so maybe it's possible. At that point, you'd be better off just buying an S21 Ultra or something and using that as a tablet. That's entirely possible. You could grab yourself an S21 Ultra. I mean, you could go with there are so many phones. You could go like a OnePlus 9 Pro is going to have similar performance in that tier. If you're looking at an 888. But if you're telling me that the main purpose of it is to play games, you would really want to add some type of cooling to a Galaxy S21 if you're telling me that you want to meet or beat the performance on a Razer Edge. So let's see. If I get a used Galaxy S21, we're going to go to Swappa. This podcast not sponsored by Swappa. Let's go S21 Ultra. So pricing on these have fallen to a pretty reasonable tier. Let's see, starting at around 320, 340. Let's say unlocked. Let's screen share this. This is an unlocked S21 Ultra, 128 gigabytes of storage, 380 in fair condition, 399 in good condition. I'm not seeing any new or... Okay, the cheapest I can find a mint condition S21 Ultra, and this is a 128 gigabyte storage phone, is $529. So you really want to shop in the good tier, and you're still probably at or above $400. Now, if you're telling me that you want to match the performance, the sustained performance, because we know Samsung, not the best with sustained performance, even on that 888. You're going to want something to control the games, so you're going to look at a controller. You can go with a controller that mounts the phone on top of like a kind of like an Xbox style setup here. So you mount the phone on like a little arm and that can kind of go over. But if you want something Kishi style and you want to match the thermal characteristics of a tablet with active cooling, you're probably going to want to use something like this. And this is my Gamesir X3. You see this big old fan on the back of it, and this has a thermoelectric cooling plate. So you put the phone on top of this, and then you plug in the controller just to power the fan. This pad gets really cold really fast, and it does help rein in some of the thermal degradation that happens in your phone. This is a $100 controller. So your S21 Ultra in good condition with 128 gigabytes of storage and some of the same cooling capability requires the use of another power source to power the cooling in addition to a cable to charge the phone is going to cost you $100 more than a Razer Edge. You can do a phone. If you only want the phone, get the S21 Ultra. It's your one device and it plays games well, and then you can pop it into this to play games and get the same cooling. But if you're telling me that you want a dedicated device just to play games, the Razer Edge is a better buy. And it's going to have a slightly bigger screen. And for the same price, it's going to include that controller. So again, I think our perspective on price to performance is off. Techies have a feeling that tech should be cheaper. But the reality of what this stuff really costs is different than techie feelings. The second you do any digging, I cannot find a better buy than the Razer Edge. Now, you step outside of Android land and you can look at iPads, or you can go into dedicated hardware, like you could pick up a Steam Deck. Totally reasonable. You could pick up a Nintendo Switch. You can find a Nintendo Switch for less money than a Razer Edge. But what I'm pointing to is a gaming tablet. And the Steam Deck is a poor tablet. It is an amazing gaming PC. A Nintendo Switch is not a good multimedia tablet. It's a great gaming console, portable gaming console. If you want to do anything else other than play games, like stream video, live stream, or just interact with any type of Android app that you might want to install, in addition to gaming, the Razer Edge is better. I'd kind of like to know, what am I missing? Because techies still have this knee-jerk reaction that Razer Edge isn't good enough and it should be more and be cheaper. But compared to what? I'll bring one up. If you want to talk about productivity, I'd look at a Lenovo. If you want to look at gaming, I wouldn't look at that Lenovo. I'd look at the Razer Edge. So those are different consumers with different needs. The Lenovo is going to do a good job of playing games, but it's going to be way better for using that tablet like a laptop and doing productivity work. The Razer Edge can do some of that productivity work if you jump through some hoops and you install some apps like Taskbar, but it's going to be way better for gaming. You see how that's the nuance we need. Around $400, what's going to get your cash? Because those are different conversations.
Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to SomeGadgetGuy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch.
See, Simon Says Hypno, again, caught me up. Simon Says Hypno says the price of the Lenovo has been as low as $300 in the States. The lowest I've seen it for was $330. So you've got a great... let's pull that up. What is the Lenovo Tab Pro 11 Gen 2? I can't remember. It's such a dumb name. P11, the P11 Gen 2. So let's pull this up right now. Oh, it is now at the lowest price that I've ever seen. Okay, so this is good. This is real good. The Lenovo Tab P11 Pro Gen 2. $309.99. So what is this using? It's using the Dimensity 9000? No. Oh, no, the Dimensity Companio 1300T. So the Companio 13T. And let's pull this up. Companio 1300T uses four ARM Cortex A78 and four ARM Cortex A55. So this is a similar core configuration to a Snapdragon 865. The Razer Edge is similar to an 888 Plus and has active cooling. So the Lenovo is going to be demonstrably, like, no contest. This is not a fair fight at all. This Lenovo is going to be a better solution for productivity, for multitasking. It has a desktop view that you can plug it into a monitor. This thing is a work tablet that can replace a good thin and light laptop. But at $309.99, you're adding another controller to be able to use it for gaming, and it will not be as good at gaming as the Razer Edge. And on top of it just being less powerful, the Razer Edge has active cooling and the Kishi included in its $399 price tag. I feel like that's a great fight. That's an incredible fight. That is competition at its most visceral. Like, that's awesome. I might go buy a Tab P11 Pro, especially not even just for myself. It does have a good OLED screen on it. And I feel like that might be better for what Lex is using than the old TCL tablet that we've given her to replace her old Huawei. It was a long story on the podcast many, 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 many months ago, but Marie and I accidentally broke Lex's Huawei tablet. You know, what's sad is I still have it over here. I still haven't cleared it all off. It's super dusty. Ugh, oh, that's gross. So we destroyed Lex's tablet, and we felt miserable about it. And it was one of the most shining examples of a seven-year-old being mature beyond her years, where you saw her face contort in a grimace of disappointment and sadness. And we had to apologize and explain to her that, like, this was not her fault. Nothing she did. She did everything right. But unfortunately, mommy made a mistake and daddy did something that was careless. And so we got her a replacement tablet, but we got her a really nice little TCL at around the same price. This Lenovo is looking a lot better than the TCL that we get. So that's pretty good. But again, it's not oranges to oranges. Even saying, like, oh, you can get this Lenovo for $310. That's a very good buy. That is an incredible amount of machine for $310. It does not outpace what the Razer Edge is built for. The Razer Edge is still built to do specific tasks better than what this Lenovo can achieve. Muppinish, you can buy a Red Magic 3 for $290. What was in the Red Magic 3? Because I think I used that. GSM Arena. Red Magic 3 for $290 has, what is this? 90 Hertz AMOLED, so it does not have 120 Hertz. It's using a Snapdragon 855, so it's like 2.5 generations behind the Razer Edge in terms of performance, and then you would still need to add some kind of controller onto it, but you wouldn't need the most expensive game server. You would be able to go with sort of a more regular, like, sort of Snap-on controller, or you could get something really nice, like I still really like my Steel Series. The Steel Series Stratus Duo, I think is what it was called. And you can get those for like $40. They're great. We've got two of them. We use them between PC and consoles and Steam Decks and on my phones. They're awesome. So for like $330, $340, you could have a two generation less powerful Red Magic with active cooling. Muppinish. So I guess the Razer seems pretty good, Juan. Sean, I'm sitting poolside watching Juan. That's dedication. He stays in my pocket and the wife is in my pocket on vacation. What's up, Sean? It's good to see you here, man. I need everyone to ask Sean if he has his order in on the Xiaomi 13 Ultra. Because I feel like he was really sadly left out of the Xiaomi 12S Ultra. I mean, you could hear it. We would be in these conversations and Barry and I would be talking about the Xiaomi 12S Ultra. And I feel like it kind of got on Sean's feelings, right? It was kind of up in his feelings. And he was like, oh man, I feel like I have missed out on something tremendous. And these guys have been doing something special and I would like to be included. So I hope that this year he's able to land that Xiaomi 13 Ultra experience so he doesn't feel so left out. So everyone just hit up Sean because he's a good guy. Let's see. Muppinish, that's hilarious. I have old copper blocks from those ancient Intel Pentium CPUs, which I have stuck with rubber bands on top of my phones with thermal paste. Oh, that's ridiculous. I love it. I love it. Omnihine 3 is saying the Redmi Note 12 Turbo, it's apparently on the level of the SD of the Snapdragon 8 Gen 1. I don't know the Redmi Note 12 Turbo. Let's see this. So the Redmi Note 12 Turbo is using, it's using that new 7 Plus Gen 2. So I believe that. Yeah, so that could be good. I have not gotten my hands, the most recent 7 series I've gotten was a 778, I think. Maybe one of the Xiaomis had a 7 Gen 1. But this new 7 Plus Gen 2, now that they've moved it back to TSMC, it's another chip that Samsung Foundry lost. That could be legit. Because I want to say this Redmi, what does GSM Arena say? I knew it was sub 300. They're saying that depending on region, it's about 270 euro. So roughly $300, and you've got a phone that performs in the ballpark of last year's $1,000 phones. That's where we're kind of pushing towards. Again, this is ridiculous compute power to not be doing other things with it. And again, we're not going to, this is USB-C type 2. So we don't have true video output support and barely good support for just basic USB OTG. It's ridiculous, man. JMX, I really want a Xiaomi 13. Now, I have the Xiaomi 13, but hopefully in the next couple of days, I'll get my shipping notification on the Xiaomi 13 Ultra. Sean, my man. Sean says, I'm waiting to recover from this vacation before I do that. Dude, I'm going to be really interested. Like, I believe you and me and Barry, when you can make that jump, we got to jump on just a live stream and just kind of chat it out. Because I am going to be very curious to hear your thoughts on what Xiaomi is doing in their Ultra tier. Because I believe you were on a Mi 11 Ultra. And you skipped the 12 because you had the 11. And I made, I was teasing, obviously not earnest in my picking on you. But like that's like the reasonable approach, right? We should be good leapfrogging phones, not always going every year if you're not trying to be a gadget reviewer like I am. So going from the Mi 11 to the Xiaomi 13 Ultra, I will be very anxious to see your thoughts when you can get your hands on one. So we got to chat that out. That I think will be a really fun conversation. Oh, actually, I just got a DHL notification. That might be something kind of interesting. Hold on, I'm not going to screen share this because there's way too much personal information, but something just popped up. This is like breaking news. I was just about to start trying to wrap up this conversation. So yes, apparently something is going to arrive soon. Hold on. I need to actually go to thedhl.com. I like making that joke, by the way, like old Facebook was thefacebook.com. There's something kind of fun about putting the in front of all of these website names. Oh, okay. DHL does that really obnoxious thing where it's out with courier for delivery, but that doesn't mean it's actually out for delivery. So they hand it off to the substation that will then deliver it. And so now it's in some type of progress. But I might have it tomorrow or Wednesday, which would be awesome. So I don't know if anyone's down and I haven't rambled at you enough in a 2-hour live stream. I might try and do on the Patreon. I might try and do like a live stream unboxing and then maybe put some of that up public. We'll have to see how that goes. I am very, very, very anxious to see if this actually shows up now. Man, I'm all giddy. This is like one of the highlight phones for me this year. I know everybody's been kind of like, oh, we're going to look at all these folding phones and Pixel Fold and whatever the Z Fold 5 is going to be. And I've got my Duos and I've got some tablets and I'm doing fine for that. I want those cameras, man. I want that content creation. I sat down and plugged wireless mics into a Vivo X90 Pro and shot one of the best looking on location videos I've ever accomplished on standalone cameras or on phones. And it was 5 minutes to set it up. Tripod, receiver, wireless mic, sit in front of camera, push record on the camera, talk for 20 minutes, push stop, and it took a minute to break it all down. It was incredible. I loved it. And now if the Xiaomi 13 Ultra can kind of even take that a step further with that aperture, oh, I want that so bad. Dave Burns is saying I should do it on the Discord. I might try to like see if I can co-stream. So like people on the Patreon and people on the Discord can all jump in on that. Yeah, we might have to do that. Omniheim is saying, what color did I get? I want it to match my 12S. So I went green. And I specifically went with one of the colors that I could get the 1 terabyte. So this is a 256 gig Xiaomi 12S Ultra. And I thought, hey, yeah, that's pretty good. I'm regularly having to dump footage from the 12S Ultra. And sometimes I'm getting real close to what my storage limits are on the 12S Ultra. So I've been using a lot of these little like SanDisk 1 terabyte drives to offload and back up content. So I really wanted the biggest version of the Xiaomi that I could get. Christmas in April for Juan. Woo-hoo-hoo! I was actually worried, like, especially knowing like Giztop shipping and importing a phone and doing all that stuff, that like, man, it probably won't, but it would hurt my soul if like I couldn't get this phone until next week. Like, this phone arrives in May. Ugh. I want to be working on it like right now. Oh yeah, Subaru Master, the Find X6 Pro and the Xiaomi 13 Ultra are really cool phones. So I feel like my early from a distance conclusion, as I look at some of these different devices, the Vivos are going to be your low light and processing champions. The Oppos are probably your better companion sensors. So the more practical telephoto and the better ultra wide. But I think the Vivo is going to, I think the Xiaomi 13 Ultra is going to be the better all-rounder. So multiple camera sensors, all matched camera sensors, and matched capabilities across the three companion sensors. I bet you the Oppo is going to be better in indoor lighting from the medium telephoto. I bet you the Vivo is going to be better in dark lighting from the main sensor, but I think the Xiaomi is going to be the overall better platform. That's my guess. I'm hoping to test that, especially over the summer. We'll see. I definitely need to get my hands on a loaner for that Oppo just to kind of see what those side sensors are like. JMX Warrior, do you have Google One storage? I don't use Google storage. G Drive is such a pain in the butt when it comes to people like me that are regularly using multiple accounts. And unfortunately, my Some Gadget Guy email address got locked up, so I can't use the Google account that was created with the Some Gadget Guy email. So especially when I'm receiving files, it's the stupid dance of, you are not approved to use this storage, and you have to ask the person who sent it to you to send it to you again and approve this email. And it's such a pain. So I do most of my cloud storage with OneDrive. If I send you a file on OneDrive and you're logged into a different Microsoft account, it doesn't matter. I sent you the link to get the file. Everything works the way that it should. I really hate how Google does G Drive. It is so annoying. And it's so annoying to the point that I don't want to use it as backup for my phones. So I'm just on the stock storage that you get for free. It's that annoying to me. I do not want to give Google money for a process and a cloud storage solution that is frustrating to use. I will not validate their business model. Oh, man. Oh, Kevin Pitts. Man, this is tough. What is the best camera phone, in your opinion, for the United States? I tried the Xiaomi 13 on T-Mobile, but it's missing the 600 megahertz band and another. What sucks is we've got to acknowledge that the phones that are going to work the best in the United States means that we're almost 2 years behind the rest of the world. So your options are probably Galaxy Note 23, not an S23 or an S23 Plus. You have to go with a Galaxy Note to get the better camera experience, or a Pixel 7 Pro. Both of those, the main camera sensors are going to be 1/1.3-inch type sensors. So they're smaller than the 1-inch type sensors. And yeah, this is tough. The Note 23 is going to have better telephoto performance in great lighting conditions. So you have tiny telephoto sensors on the Note 23. And when you're outside in super bright daylight, those tiny telephoto sensors will do a better job of zooming farther than the telephoto sensor on the Pixel 7 Pro. But the Pixel 7 Pro, hashtag Team Pixel, hashtag gift from Google, the telephoto on this phone is much larger. The sensor is much bigger than the sensors on the Note 23. So if you don't need the most extreme reach that you really only want to use in the brightest light. Like, for example, I love taking a Pixel as the phone that will kind of hang out with family and friends. I'm hanging out, I'm in someone's living room. We keep our living room and our bedrooms kind of cozy lit. Like, people don't have studio lights, like directional big bright studio lights going. So the Pixel 7 Pro is phenomenally better at landing one of those cute candid shots from across a living room. So much better. And in fact, in some ways, the Pixel 6 Pro is even just a little bit better than the Pixel 7 Pro in some kinds of challenging or mixed lighting or low light kinds of situations. The Pixel 7 Pro is also the better video, is the better practical video shooter, where if you're shooting 4K 60, it is to date the only phone that can switch between all three rear cameras while shooting 4K 60 in one clip. So if that kind of production matters to you at all, then I would give the Pixel 7 Pro the edge. The Note 23 only wins when you're talking about extreme telephoto in bright, bright light. In any other challenging light, the Pixel 7 telephoto is better. I think it's the more practical sensor. It's just not as impressive for reaching across a soccer field. It's way better for reaching across a living room. It's way better for reaching across a restaurant. It's way better for shooting in dimmer or dark nighttime conditions. So I'd give the Pixel 7 Pro the edge. I find the Pixel 7 Pro is more useful in more situations. The Note 23 is much better at a couple specialized situations. From Omniheim, what do you think of the 14-bit RAW Xiaomi is promoting on the 13 Ultra? I don't know yet what to think. I want to try it. I genuinely haven't run into issues with like 10-bit RAW. So I'm kind of curious. I don't know that it will have a substantial impact on my style of photography. I'm a very practical, candid kind of shooter, and I'm not doing heavy enough editing. Since the earliest days of me picking up a film camera, a film SLR in high school, I try to shoot as much as I can in camera. So if I get a RAW file, I'm hoping that my exposure and the light and what I did to capture that photo is mostly built into the image directly from me pushing the shutter. I don't do so much work on these photos that I feel that additional data is going to be much of a benefit. And there are times where I like to shortcut that process. So Expert RAW or Super RAW. So Vivo has Super RAW, and it's basically like taking a bracket. It's not really a RAW photo. It squishes a bunch of data together and it creates a semi-processed DNG file. That's a bigger benefit for the way that I shoot than a complete from scratch, completely unedited RAW file. So I'm curious. I'm very curious. But at some point, we do run into the optical physics limitations of tiny little sensors and lenses. And a 1-inch sensor is a huge, beefy sensor, but it's still on a phone with phone lens limitations. And I worry that we're overhyping some of these capabilities, like Samsung with 200 megapixels. There's a reason why we don't see 200 megapixel full frame cameras. When you've got a lens that's this much bigger with much better glass, and you're not putting a 200 megapixel sensor behind this lens, you're not getting 200 megapixels. That's not real. So I worry that we hype something like 14-bit RAW because it's going to sound really impressive, and then people are going to try it, and you're like, okay, yeah, it does this, and I get this benefit, but it's not really improving the mobile, immediacy, pocketable, discrete photography experience that a phone can bring. A phone as a dynamic, portable content creation machine is so exciting because of how discreet and how it blends in and how it doesn't distract your subject as much. It's why I point to things like family photos, you know, documenting those types of family activities or family get-togethers, and you can do something really exciting there. But I also look at mobile journalism. Mobile journalism depends on a kind of discretion where the camera does not distract from the event that's being observed. And a phone can do that really, really well now. And I don't know that 14-bit RAW contributes much to the benefit of using a discrete photography solution. Dave Burns is saying, be careful with that lens. Don't Linus this. That was weird. I kind of muted. Oh, I accidentally clicked on something and okay, sorry. I've got like multiple plugins going for routing audio and I just clicked out to mute my mic in the middle of a sentence. My Xiaomi 12S Ultra is definitely roughed up. I don't know that I'll be able to show this on stream. Nah, it's not really going to show. Like, I can kind of get some light going that way. It is covered in scratches. So this is the factory-installed plastic screen protector, and it is raked, and it is scraped, and there's a centerline scratch that looks like a crack. It's not a crack in the screen. Thankfully, this phone is so expensive. But this phone has been used hard. I rode this phone hard. And it held up well. But again, it's terrifying using these like curved glass devices aggressively out in the field. Ugh, it's crazy. Kevin Pitts. Oh, Kevin Pitts replying. Thanks, man. I have the Pixel 7 Pro. I just had issues with it and went back to OnePlus. The Pixel would drop Bluetooth and signal sometimes out of the blue. They say that it was fixed in the last update. And it could have just been a one-off on, like, your phone. Like, my Pixel 7 Pro has been really well-behaved through a lot of these updates that others have claimed have caused these disastrous problems. Yeah, out of all of them, Bluetooth has been fine. I can't say many of these phones lately have been great. I think the best Bluetooth performance I currently have is on the Moto. So the Moto Edge Plus, when I walk around the two stories of my condo and go outside, like around the car and stuff, and I'm connected to my Beyerdynamic Dynamic or my Sony, my XM4s. I have XM4s. I don't have XM5s. I think my Moto Edge probably does the best at keeping a decently consistent signal across a floor of my condo or going outside. The Pixel and the Sony have been good. I think the worst performers I have are my Surface Duos. The Surface Duo 2 was miserable at launch. It got better. It got way better. But it's still, I think, the most limited range for a Bluetooth radio. I actually haven't run my OnePlus 11 much. I need to run it more on Bluetooth. For the OnePlus 11, I was really using it with the OnePlus Buds, and I don't know how well it'll do. Yeah, I'm going to give that a try. Kevin, that's actually a good point. I haven't kind of run that as hard as I'd like. It's hard because I've got to get like 7 or 8 different devices and then look at a couple different pairs of Bluetooth earbuds and headphones to try and do that, and sorting all of that is very time consuming. But actually, now that you say that, like, you know, when I say a Pixel 7 Pro is good, I'm putting that in the context of I've tried some of the worst. So if you go like Galaxy S22 versus Pixel 7 Pro, I bet you the S22 has a better Bluetooth radio on it, especially for having a Qualcomm chipset and not a Samsung-made Tensor chipset. I bet you the Qualcomm S22 is a better performer for Bluetooth than the Pixel 7 Pro's Tensor. Yeah, I got to play with that. That's a good point. I like that. That's fun. That's a fun idea, and I haven't really considered how to make that into an editorial or into a video. TED Talks Tech, most DSLRs are 14-bit RAW. Samsung makes a lot of noise about their 16-bit DNGs, and I gotta admit, the DNG edit's real nice. I'm curious. I mean, I'm down to check it out. I'm very interested in what a 14-bit RAW is really gonna bring to that kind of mobile scrub. And I'm going to have to try and do something where I push the data further than what I would normally do. Because like I said, I try to capture more in camera. So if I want something to look a little darker or contrastier, I shoot a darker image. And then I there's less work to do from the editing. Dave Burns, here he goes, slandering Samsung again. One of the few times I've brought up something that might be better on a Samsung than on a Pixel. I'm such a hater. It's all the haterade for that Samsung haterade. But isn't that what's tough? If you're asking me what the best camera platform is, I would pick a Pixel over a Samsung. I think it's got the better collection of practical features that folks would be more interested in using, and it doesn't fake images of the moon. It doesn't lie to you about what the camera capabilities are. But if you're telling me you're having issues with Bluetooth, yeah, I bet you are. I bet you there are a number of people out there that are rocking Pixels that came from an iPhone or came from a Samsung going, hey, you know, this isn't as nice. Something's wrong here. Something's broken here. And you're like, well, that's probably accurate. Oh, Kevin Pitts, you're never going to hear me. Again, it's Kevin Pitts says, I had rock solid performance out of the OnePlus 9 and 10T. Man, the farther we get away from the OnePlus 9 Pro, the more I feel like we've lost some of that premium built, high-end performance conversation. I will pick up my OnePlus 9 Pro before I pick up my OnePlus 10 Pro. The OnePlus 9 Pro is a better phone, just all around. It was built better. It launched at a higher price point. It was a more expensive phone to manufacture. The only thing is the difference in outright top-end sprint speed performance between a Snapdragon 8 Gen 1 and a Snapdragon 888. The OnePlus 9s were better than the OnePlus 10s. Like, that's the gig. So yeah, it's kind of tough, you know? We can't just kind of put every phone into a vacuum because older phones still exist, but man, it's interesting to see. Like, we kind of make progress in one area, but then we face compromises in another, and then things get more expensive or component costs get slashed. This stuff gets weird. And that kind of stuff is really hard to kind of keep a global eye view on. So I guess it, you know, that's one of the reasons why it's just easy to kind of fall back and say, oh, I don't know, just buy an iPhone. iPhones, they just work. You don't have to do any critical thinking or comparison shopping because there is no competition. Just buy an iPhone. Aditya Anil, I'd almost always... Oh, there it goes. I'd almost always go Sony. The Xperia 1 Mark IV is tempting. And to be honest, my familiarity with Sony is undeniably at play because you're on a 5 Mark II. And I hope we get some news soon on what might be going on with the Xperias. This is around the right time of year where they'll make the announcement. And then a couple months later, they'll ship to the United States. Like maybe at the end of the summer, we'll actually get them here. Gormlord, the lady at Best Buy was trying to sell me on the 100x zoom, but it would just try to make the image better with AI, and I wasn't a fan. So, where every phone camera is obviously strongest is on its native focal length. So, this is the Xiaomi 13. It's got a 15 millimeter equivalent ultra wide. It's got a 23 millimeter equivalent wide camera. And then it has a 3.2x times zoom telephoto. The 3.2, that's roughly, what is that? 23, 43, so it's roughly a 75 millimeter field of view. So at that 75-ish, 75 to 80, somewhere in there, I think. Someone please check my math. I think I have that right. It's a teeny little sensor. Like it's slightly smaller sensor than the telephotos that are on the Note 23. But if you take a shot from that native 75-ish millimeter field of view, that's where that sensor's strongest. as soon as you crop zoom into that, the image degrades rapidly. And there's only so much AI that can correct for images of real things, not a fake photo of the moon, because we have AI that it's really well trained. We know what the moon looks like on any given day, at any time of year, at any position in the sky. We know what the moon looks like, and we can paint in that information really easily. But that's what's frustrating, is so Samsung sells you on taking a photo of the moon, and then you point the phone at something across the street, and it looks like garbage, because you've crop zoomed so far past the ability to resolve a good image. AI can't fix that. You have too little information to really correct for that. The phones that I feel do the best pixel resample crop are Xiaomi and Google. So it was a big deal. It was very frustrating on the Pixel 6 Pro. The Pixel 6 Pro has the same main camera sensor as the Pixel 7 Pro. But the Pixel 6 Pro really only works like a 12 megapixel shooter. The Pixel 7 Pro does a really good job of cutting half the resolution of the main camera sensor to give you a 2x zoom, get you a little bit in between the main sensor and the telephoto. It's really good at kind of cropping in to that field of view and doing the demosaic of all of the subpixels to give you a better 12 megapixel image at 2x and at 10x zoom. 10x zoom on the Pixel 7 Pro, I think, looks better than the native 10x zoom on the Note 23 in most lighting conditions. The only time I feel the Note 23 wins is if you're in direct sunlight. If your subject is brightly lit by Southern California direct sun at 10x zoom, that's the native focal length of the super telephoto. That's where the Note 23 wins. The second you shoot indoors or at night, a 50% crop, a two times zoom from the 5x telephoto, 10x from the Pixel 7 Pro, I think looks better. So having a feel for that and being able to express it and being able to show samples of it, it's like getting that message out there is very difficult. Samsung is selling 100x moon zoom. Those photos look like garbage. You're never going to want to share those or save them. It's not for anything important. It's a novelty that the camera will zoom out that far. But you're now starting to get into things like, if it's noon in Southern California and I use 100x zoom, I have the best possible light. It's the brightest sun that we can get. But the diffraction of heat waves in between me and my subject at 100x zoom will radically degrade the image. So like if I take a picture of something across the street and it's above 80 degrees, heat waves off asphalt will disrupt the view of that photo. And then the AI algorithms are going to make this weird cartoon panel looking splotchy photo. That's not going to be a photo worth saving. It's garbage. But the phone was built around that kind of feature. It's ridiculous to put that much effort into marketing a feature that doesn't bring any kind of tangible or practical benefit. Dave Burns, we know what the moon looks like because it's a hologram. Fake sky confirmed. Flat Earth, flat Earth. Yeah, see, Gormler, this is what I mean. So it cleared up the Best Buy logo at the back of the store, but anything that wasn't text, not so good. If I take a photo of a street sign across the street, the Note 23 is a monster. If I take a photo of leaves across the street or a flower across the street, it looks like an awful oil painting. Like, it looks like if I were taking an intro to painting class and had never seen Bob Ross and was just sort of smearing like big, thick thumbprints of paint on a canvas, that's what 100x zoom looks like. It is not great. But if you only shoot at 10x zoom, that little sensor is a really capable little sensor in good light. But that's the real focal length of that lens. That's what the camera is really built to do, and everything else is just sort of a gimmick that's been stapled onto it. Aditya. I mean, it's basic physics. Aditya says, the smaller sensor that lets less light in works better when there is excess lighting when compared to the larger sensor that runs a risk of letting too much light in excess lighting. So with HDR processing, you can control for that by taking a stack of images at a faster shutter speed, smash all that data together, and you get highlights and lowlights. And the Pixel is better at doing that than Samsung. Google's photo processing is just plain better. But when you get the video, video is choppier on the Pixel, in part because it has to use such a fast shutter speed. The Samsung will actually make some pretty decent looking video at like 30 frames per second or 24 frames per second, but that's also fake upscaled resolution. If you look at the telephoto sensors on the Note 23, they're 10 megapixel sensors. They actually don't have the resolution to make a 4K video. Oh, the doorbell just rang. So, folks, I've been going for 2 hours and 35 minutes. It's about time I wrap this up. We got to put a pin in this. Thank you for joining me on a Pajama Podcast. We went all over the place. We were talking about gaming tablets, and we were talking about reviewers. I got all cranky. There was an intro plug for the subreddit, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. Either tomorrow or Wednesday or Thursday, whenever DHL decides that they're going to drop off a package from China, be on the lookout for a live unboxing. We'll do an unboxing for the Xiaomi 13 Ultra, and maybe we'll also do that on the Discord too. I think that could be fun. Dave Burns, I am shocked. This never happens. Like, I never go long on this podcast. My podcast is 2 hours long. That's what we budget for. It's a two-hour show. And we're, again, at 2 hours and 35 minutes. So it's pretty great. It's awesome. So this is going to be fun. We're going to have some really monster devices to talk about soon. There are a couple products on my desk right now that I cannot show you because we're under embargoes. And it's going to be interesting to keep up with that. And I've got some comparisons planned between Vivo and Xiaomi. I really want to work Sony into the conversation again. Hasselblad versus Leica versus Zeiss is a really fun conversation. So stay tuned. There's going to be a pretty decent photography focus, I feel, as we get into the summer. And maybe that'll help if you're on summer vacation or taking trips with your family or anything like that. Maybe these are the types of videos that are going to be more fun to check out. Because I know we're going to be hitting some, like, the zoo and some museums. We need to get Lex to the Getty. Could be pretty cool. So, folks, I want you to have an awesome week. I want you to be awesome with your technology. I want you to do awesome with your technology. I'll catch you back here next week for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. Be safe. Take care of yourself so you can take care of others. I'll catch you back. I love you all. Be well.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.